Hello, everybody. My name is Ignacio Ugarte. Well, some people call me Iñaki, so don't be surprised if you hear that. And I'm going to talk today about high frequency in the core of active regions. And this is not about Taylor stability. I had to say that, right? So for those of you who don't work on the active region heating and loops, I should just say that the frequency of the energy deposition in active regions is not known. So that's the main motivation of this. The fact that it's not known doesn't mean that we haven't worked on this or that we don't have any theories about it. And in fact, we have made the case for both high and low frequency heating. By high frequency heating, we mean that the interval between heating events is shorter than the typical time it takes to cool for that loop. And by low frequency heating, we mean that it is longer. So we allow those structures to cool down. So the question that we are raising in the community is, are loop strands reheated before cooling completely? Do they do it sometimes? And as I said, it has been proposed, both cases have been defended. A few years ago, and these are movies that I made for loops workshop years ago, and this is Trace, and this is XRT. When you look at the core of an active region, I don't think you hear me. You don't hear me, right? It is good? At the core of an active region, you see a strong emission in the high temperatures, but then you might see that this is at 171, and you won't see loops cooling down. And Spiro worked on this, and other people, and said, there's no cool loops. Loops are not cooling. It's a steady heating. That's the explanation. But of course, we have work on other active regions, and we do look at the core of those active regions, and we see hot plasma, and we see loops cooling. And Leakey has worked on this. I have worked on this, and other people have worked on this. So what is the latest? Is there enough emission at the cool temperatures to support this low frequency scenario? Many people have worked on this. And the reply that you can get from some of them is, no, there's not enough emission. This is the emission measure distribution where you have here temperature in the log scale. The emission in active regions peaks around 4 million degrees. And these are the two slopes that you expect in the emission measure for two different models, low frequency and high frequency heating. When in a high frequency heating, you don't allow it to cool, so there is less emission of cool plasma. Warren looked at some observations that they saw very little plasma at cool temperatures. They argue there is no cooling. Of course, not everybody thought the same. Durges looked at other active region, and he found an agreement between his data points, this is the DM from the observations, and his model of low frequency heating. So what's going on? Why do we have two different active regions saying different results? Well, I work on this, and in fact, I look at active region as a function of the age, okay? I look at an active region soon close to their emergence, and look one rotation later, and I noticed that the DNs were changing. Some of them were here with high emission measure at high temperatures, but later on they would be lower. So it's not surprising, perhaps, that we have different emission measures that could explain different mechanisms, because the emission of the active region changes with the evolution of the active region. And in fact, Harry, look at this, and you don't see it very well, but basically these are emission measure at different temperature ranges as a function of the magnetic flux. And what he noticed is that there is a dependency. And of course, there is a dependency in an active region of the magnetic flux as a function of age. All right, so this is where it all stands right now. And of course, there are other people that have worked on this, Steve Bradshaw, Jeff Ripp, and Scott Ripper, that has a poster about this. I'm going to look at this very differently. This is where one part of the discussion is. What I'm going to do is something different. I'm going to look at the time dependency. After all, we have these instruments. Why not look at the variability in time and say something about the frequency? So I'm going to use AIA-SDO. I think this is ideal for this, for the obvious reasons, and those are listed here, above here. But for me personally, it is the Iron 18 contribution in the 94 Armstrong channel. Several authors have worked on a method to deconvolve that to extract the contribution from the cool components, iron 10 and iron 14, and just extract the iron 18 emission, 4 to 8 million Kelvin. You can go and read the papers for the method. What I want to say here is, this is again the, no, this is the response functions for several instruments. The green is AIA 94, the red is XRT aluminum thick, and these are several spectral lines that we can observe, for example, with ice. The cyan line here, the blue one, is iron 18. And the peak of the emission measure in an active region is around here. So why do I think that iron 18 is a good diagnostic for the variability of an active region and to look at the frequencies of the heating? Because first of all, for the range of temperature that he observes, which is around close to that peak of the emission. XRT does that as well, but iron 18 has a much narrower response, similar to the spectral lines. And the nice thing about iron 18 is that it doesn't overlap almost with some of the cool lines that we traditionally look like iron 12 and iron 10. All right. So what do we do? This is 94, this is 193, this is 171. If you use these two, you can subtract the cool component and you get left with this. This is iron 18 emission, the variability just pure, or as pure as we can do, in the core of an active region. And you see all these fluctuations, these loops fluctuating. And this is one rotation later, much dimmer, same scaling. This is another data set. And this is another data set. All right, so what we did is, well, let's look at the variability there and let's count how much it changes and how frequently. Very simple, event detection. So what I did is something very simple that some of you might have heard me talking about it at the SDO workshop, but it's a very simple thresholding method where you look basically at the intensity as you go along the light curve, you compare to previous intensities, and you determine when you have an event. Just to show an example how it goes. This is, for example, one light curve, and you see where are the detections. These are the blue lines are the detections. And it finds, I mean, it's like any algorithm, it's not perfect. There are some places where it misses, but normally you go to a neighboring pixel and it finds that event. What do we do with that? We do that to every single pixel in the movie. And then we define an event or a non-event. And then we get a movie like this. And again, the projector doesn't do very good justice, but you have a pixel-to-pixel detection. And any coherence that you see in the images is just from the data. It's not from the method detection, because we treat every light curve in a pixel independently. Because it's not very nice to look at this with just ones and zeros. What I did is to put a face to that variability. And if you do that, for every event, you have the start and the end, and you color-code that, then you have an event that is starting. You have it in red, then it goes to green, and then in blue. And then you see, again, the coherence in pixels, not surprising because the loops are evolving, but the detection picks this up. All right, so we have for each event, we have a start, peak, end, duration, interval, and also we have the increase in data numbers. What do we do with this? So we do this for all the three active regions that we have. We do this detection, then we get some statistics, and we look at, for example, the number of events that we have in these 6 hours of observation for every active region. And we have typically 15, 20 events, and they are all very similar, in fact, in these active regions, the statistics we get. We get durations, we get intervals, and also intensities, but I'm not going to talk much about that right now. We can do that for the second pass of that active region. I will show up here. And you see that actually as the active region evolves, some of those parameters change. But again, I'm not going to talk for the moment about that. So the main thing that I want to point out is we found an event every 20, 25 minutes, okay? Is that the frequency of the heating in an active region? And I guess, I mean, some of those of us who have worked on loops, we probably know already that it is not. But I'm going to show you through an exercise that is not as simple as that. I mean, at least this is the lower the lower limit frequency there. All right, so how are we going to I'm going to use EPTEL to tell you why it's not as simple as just looking at those frequency in those events. All right, so EPTEL, I think you've heard before about it, is a 0D model where we get the density and temperature, just one single value for every loop, as a function of time, and then we have, you can compute with Chianti the emission of different lines. If you put 18 events in a six-hour interval, just to get those 20, 25 minutes, you basically can get a temperature that stays very much around 4 million degree Kelvin, and densities, high densities, and these curves that have more or less the same number of events that I was showing in my statistics, which would mean, in fact, that the heating is effectively steady. But of course, we know where there's no one loop. I just wanted to show you what it meant to have one single loop in one line of sight. By the way, the fact that we have 18 events and we get this doesn't mean that we are getting at the events, because if we triple our number of events, still our envelope of emission is going to have a limited number of events detected, okay? So this would be the high-frequency case. That was the high-frequency case, where we have heating very frequently and we don't allow it to cool. This is the other case with very low-frequency events, two events in 6 hours, where we allow the plasma to cool. And again, if we put 200 loops in our line of sight, because we could have many along our line of sight, well, our envelope of emission could have a very similar to what we found in our detection. So again, just to say that this is complex. All right? So I was going to do that to infer something about the frequency. Now I'm saying that I cannot get anything about the frequency. What's the point? Okay. So the point is that we are going to do the approach differently. We are going to look at full active regions. What we are going to do is take our full active region, actually look at HMI, for example, take the magnetic field, and then get the help of somebody who knows very much about this, like Thomas Beagleman, and who does a nonlinear force field extrapolation for us. And we find 10,000 lines there. And what we do now is just use EPTEL, which is very convenient. Thanks, Jim and company, for developing this. It's very fast computationally, so we can deal with such amount of data. And what we're going to do is populate those lines with densities and temperatures based on some heating functions. And we are going to do first a steady heating. And when we do that to a steady heating, this is what we got. And again, the projection doesn't do exactly correct, but it looks pretty much the same. So nonlinear force-free, 10,000 lines. We do a steady heating for all these lines in a dependency in the heating, which is B over L we have chosen here. And this is what the observations look like. And you can make your mind if it looks similar or not. This is a starting point. But we're interested in time. So this is actually what our data looks like. This is the AIA 6 hours observations. What happens when we do an impulsive heating in our active region, where we have this frequency that we allow it to change in time? And we tune it to produce loops at 4 million degrees, as we know there are in this active region. And this is the simulation that we get. And this was the first one we ran. And I don't know if you see from there the variability. I can see the loops changing. But I don't know if from the back you can see. Again, I mean, it looks plausible, the variability. Qualitatively, we are pretty happy for the first run. 2 minutes, thank you. So what is the next step? Because this is what we have done to the data. To the data, we had looked at our events, detect these fluctuations, and trying to get some statistics about what's going on in our active region, in our real data. And we said, very hard to get at the frequencies of the heating from that. But what we can do is just look at our simulations and just do the same thing and do our detection algorithm, find our events in this other way, and then find our statistics. And you don't see anything here, but there's nothing to see just yet, because this is the moment where we are right now. We are basically exploring our parameter space. And I cannot give you a quantitative answer just yet, but what I can say is that, well, we have to compare these two things and find out much, that this is a high-frequency heating scenario, where we run a low-frequency scenario, and it was much more sparse in loops than this. So as a qualitative look at the data, high frequency looks better right now. But we hope to come in the future and give you a more quantitative answer, which is, I know, what some of you want to see. So summarizing, I think it is very interesting the fact that we can look at iron 18 images pure and in time, single pixels, and explore the fluctuations of the whole component in loops, in active region loops. I've shown you what is the typical variability, and this is a lower limit for what is going on in the cores in terms of heating. Counting events is not enough. And what we are doing right now is comparing these zero-degree including these hydrodynamic models with the nonlinear force-free. We find this qualitative consistency with high-frequency heating, but the quantitative analysis is pending. So we expect to do this and give you a more definitive answer to this question.
Is it on?
Yes, it is on. Okay, in order to see a steady loop, steady emission, you need two things. One is, of course, you'd have to have the steady heating, but you also have to have the steady magnetic field. Because if the magnetic field at the photosphere is evolving because the active region is emerging very fast or it's dissipating and this and that, there's no way your loop is gonna be steady, even if the heating is steady. So for these regions, are they in kind of like a, in their mature stage where the magnetic field is more or less slowly evolving, or are they freshly emerging and stuff? In which case, you're gonna have difficulty unraveling the magnetic evolution from the heating evolution.
Yeah, I mean, well, I didn't explain, but I guess it's obvious. The field is fixed in this case, and we just change the plasma physics. The field is going to evolve, and there's probably a combination of things of reconnection, and what we're trying to address here is the background, the heating itself. So it's one approximation. At some point, somebody will have to do this 3D or driving the simulation from below, but I don't know if it can be done computationally this right now as we are doing. So that's why we approach is like that. But yes, there will be a reconnection if, apart from something else.